Hey everybody, Jesse Case would like you to know that he will be performing his stand-up comedy routines at the Bridgetown Comedy Festival in Portland, Oregon from April 22nd through the 25th, alongside such comedians as the Upright Citizens Brigade, Maria Bamford, Mark Maron, and so on. Tickets are still available at BridgetownComedyFestival.com. Thank you. Please enjoy today's broadcast. Ta-ta!
Podcast time. Who's pumped? You excited? I hope you're excited. I'm kind of tired, actually. I'm recording this in the middle of the night, all alone, which is kind of a bummer. Walter's asleep. I shut him down at 11:30 on the weekends. But 9 p.m. normally. He's going to be in the next episode. Don't worry about it. We're still going to have fun because I couldn't record it today. I'll get into why. It was Easter, you know? It was Easter here at my house. A lot of stuff going on. Very strange day. There was an earthquake today in Los Angeles. Felt my first earthquake. 7.2 in Baja, California. Which is weird, man. It was really weird. It was what they call a rolling earthquake, as opposed to a shaking earthquake. So it, which those are apparently better. The rolling earthquakes, those are better to go through. But I mean, that's what it felt like. It felt like I was on water. You know, it was just the whole house just shaking back and forth. The chandeliers, some of the water came out of the pool, slapped the side of the house. It was a very freaky experience. Then there were all those aftershocks. They say the safest place to be during an earthquake is either in the middle of a field or in a building in California, which is where I am. You know, I'm in a house in California. It's a building, I guess. But I don't know, man. I don't know if that's true. Like, they, you know, because I asked the people I live with. I was like, is this house earthquake safe? Is this health earthquake safe? Health? Hmm? And they said, yeah, it is. We had an earthquake reinforced. And I said, what does that mean? And they said, rebar, my friend. A lot of rebar going on. A lot of rebar going down. So, that's not safe to me to. All right, so there might be a big earthquake. So here's what we're going to do to make the house safer. We're going to put more shit in it that will fall on you. We're going to make it all heavier. See, before it was just a nice wood frame. So if you just covered your head, you'd be fine. But now, there's a bunch of steel and all kinds of spiky, sharp shit in there that'll stab you through the heart if it still falls down. So that's okay, though. That's okay. That's not okay. That's not safe to me. The Japanese got it right. They get a lot of earthquakes all the time. Hardly anybody dies in Japan from the earthquakes. They make their houses out of paper. They got those origami houses, right? Probably not anymore, huh? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how that works. But it was Easter. It was Easter today. Hope everybody had a good Easter. You guys remember the Easter bunnies at the mall? That's the creepiest thing you could ever... Why are malls so secular, by the way? Santa Claus and Easter? Are there Jewish malls? Anyway, the mall Easter bunny. Creepiest thing ever. Creepiest thing ever. The mall Santa, I get it. All right? You sit on Santa's lap. You tell him what you want while your parents stand there. They eavesdrop because you're keeping it a secret. But you can't make an Easter wish. You know what you're getting? You're getting some eggs. You're getting some of those Peeps marshmallows. You know, you're getting some tinsel. This is bizarre. But that generic mall Easter costume is so terrifying. There's, you know, I mean, all right, we're all adults here. There's no Santa. There's no Santa Claus, all right? But kids write letters to Santa. They still write letters, and their parents mail them. And I always wondered what happens to those letters. You know, they just throw them away at the post office? What's going on there? They use them to fuel something. They burn the letters. But I found out, I talked to my buddy who works at the post office, found out they give them out at nursing homes for old people to read. That's what happens. So if you're a little kid, you write a letter, Dear Santa Claus, at number 1 North Pole Lane in the North Pole. They give them to old people. Like, how much more are they trying to depress the old people? It's not like anything on a kid's list would make sense. They're going to take the youngest people and the oldest people, slap them together. Like, when these people were kids, all they wanted in their Santa letters, use some maybe some wooden blocks, maybe an orange or something. Now it's mental. And that's why old people hate the younger generation. It's these fucking Santa letters, man. Like, these old people, they actually fought in World War II. Now you have to read these letters.
Dear Santa, I want an Xbox 360 with the new Call of Duty game. It's got extra blood, and you can actually play as the Nazis. Isn't that cool? You can be a Nazi and shoot the Allies on Normandy. Please put it in my stocking with the new Crazy Eyes Killer album. Thanks.
They're just sitting there getting full of hate. If I'm ever in a nursing home, I'm writing all the kids back. I'm writing all the kids back a suicide letter from Santa. Probably by then, though, it'll be email, huh? Kids will just email Santa? That's like the ultimate pedophile thing. You know the ultimate crafty pedophile. He went ahead and nailed down SantaClaus@gmail.com the first day. First day Gmail came out. Get that Santa Claus email address. Get some primo jerk-off material during the winter. Ugh. I got some shows coming up you guys should go to. I've got the doing that Bridgetown Comedy Festival in Portland, okay? So I think that's the 22nd through the 25th. Go to bridgetowncomedy.com. Check that out. Look at the schedule. I'm up every night, and then there's there's another room there called the Tanker, which is like just this continuous open mic that they run for like 12 hours at a time. The crowd just comes in and leaves as they please. It's a lot of fun. I always have a good time at that festival. So, you know, get those tickets. They're cheap tickets, too. You get like, you can go to like any show you want for $100. I mean, what I mean is that gives you a pass to all the shows for all 4 days. I don't mean it's $100 a show. You can pay individually, you know, and then it's like $10, $15, and $20 depending on the show. I think I'm in the $15 range for mine. I haven't worked my way up to the $20 range shows yet, but, you know, we're going to get there. Last night, here in L.A., I went down to the Improv because Louis C.K. was headlining down there. If you're one of my listeners that's not into comedy, I mean, you're into comedy, you know what I mean, but you're not a comic or whatever, check out Louis C.K. Because as a comic, sometimes you forget that not everyone has heard of these amazing comics that you know, so you don't even bring it up to people. But Louis C.K., it's Louis spelled like Louis, L-O-U-I-S, and then C-K, spelled like the letter C, then the letter K. You know, because his last name's pronounced C-K, and no one could say it. So he changed it, actually, to C-K. But check him out. He's fucking amazing. And I just stare in awe when he's on stage. It's not even funny. It's very funny, but I don't even laugh. I just stare with my mouth open like, you fuck. I get down there. I get down to the Improv, and the show was sold out. Completely sold. No, not even any standing room. Usually there's some standing room back by the sound booth, you know, if you're a comic. But not even a standing room. So there's this spot in the Improv right by the bathroom where you're far enough from there's a separate bar. So you're far enough from the bar's music to where you can actually hear what's going on in the showroom if you stand there. But, you know, it smells like poop. You're right there by the bathroom. So I'm kind of crouched down there all by myself listening to the show. And then I just thought about how, like, that's one of those things that you do that's only going to be cool if you make it. Like, if I make it in comedy. Otherwise, it's a pathetic story. Like, you know, sometimes you'll see some documentary, and it'll be like, when the Beatles played the Cavern Club in Liverpool, a young boy would stand out by the dumpster because he couldn't afford the 5 shillings for entry. Every now and then, the door would open when one of the cooks would throw out some fish guts, and the boy would actually get to hear the glorious sound of the Beatles standing there in the rain all alone. That boy's name was Mick Jagger. And then you're like, oh, that's awesome, man. Mick was really roughing it. But I'm sure there were like 100 other people standing out there, and for them, that's kind of a crappy story. Like, hey, did you ever get to see the Beatles? No. Hung out in this alleyway. Smelled like fish. You know. It sucks. So that's one of those things where, you know, if I make it big someday, that'll be a cool story. Yeah, man, I used to go to the Improv. And I'd crouch down by the toilets just so I could hear the show. But otherwise, it's just going to be like, hey, do you hear Louis C.K.'s new set? No. I don't even want to talk about it. Don't look at me. Stop talking to me. Anyway, he's hilarious. So check him out. It's an interesting name. I met a girl named Louie a few days ago, which, all right. She was waiting on me at a restaurant. I mean, she was the waitress. She wasn't. I wasn't standing her up at a restaurant. She was the waitress. So she comes over, and I find out her name's Louie, so I want to talk to her about her name. I want to ask her about her name because it's an interesting name for a female to have. But it's when someone has an interesting name, it's very difficult. You have to figure out, you have to immediately assess what they hear all the time about their name. You can't be a hack about it. So I couldn't be like, oh, Louie, whoa, because she hears that every day. And, because having a weird name, it sucks. I got a cousin named Justin Case. That's his name. He listens to the podcast, by the way. So thanks for listening, buddy. But his name's Justin Case. Justin Case. It's a weird name to have for the firstborn. He's the oldest. You know, he's got a younger brother. But you'd think the younger brother would be named Justin. Like Justin, we're going to have this one, Justin Case. You know, just in case the other one turns out to be gay or something. But no, he's the oldest one. You know, he's a good guy. He's my cousin. But it's like, you know, he got all the good genes in the family. He's like a smart dude. You know, he's got pecs and everything. Because Justin, really, he's the only sort of like attractive dude in my family. Everyone else, all right, he gets in the hot tub. He wears like a Speedo thong. And everyone else keeps wearing their T-shirt. Everyone's got like a ZZ Top T-shirt. That's always been a great cover-up, the wearing the T-shirt in the pool, you know? But everybody just sits around and tries to hide from my grandparents that we're not alcoholics. So it's fun. It's a fun time. Justin, man, that guy was like, just his genes. I don't know. He's so fucking attractive. He's got this, like, chiseled chest. I know it's weird to say about, like, my male cousin. That, you know, fuck you. Stop judging me. He's got this, like, chiseled chin, you know? Got those, like, manly, thick eyebrows, but they're not bushy. They're just thick somehow. I don't know. He stands around, you know, hey, man, hey, how's it going? He's got that good vocal tone. I don't know. But he was, you know, there used to be this picture of Justin hanging in my grandma's house. My grandparents, the southern side, the North Carolina side, my grandparents, they have this old kind of antebellum house. And you know that whole like World War II generation, like the shit they have in their house. It's always like weird green glass. Just sort of like, it's like a weird like Victorian era. A lot of ashtrays, but no one smokes. Yeah, they have like weird Victorian porcelain and stuff like that. And it's very old people. And it's like not a good house for a little kid because you can't play with anything. Like, how do I play with this? How do I play with this statue of George Washington? It's kind of weird. Anyway, but there was this picture of Justin. That was so fucking cute. He's standing there with his got his like kind of glossy puppy eyes, wearing his little overalls. And even me, I was like, you know, he's older than me, but even me when I was 3, I was like, that's the cutest fucking kid in the world. Jesus Christ. Like, I was a cute kid. I was a wicked cute kid. But I was only a cute kid in the sense that's cute later. Like, if you look at a picture of me now and you know me now, you know, and then you look at a picture of me, you're like, oh my God, you were the cutest kid ever. Jesus Christ, look how fucking cute you are. And basically, you're just telling me that I've gone to shit. But then, you know, you look at Justin. Then you look at his kid picture, and you're like, yeah, it makes sense. You know, but even then, jeez, fuck, this fucking cute kid. Anyway, what was he even talking about? Anyway, Justin's great. He lives with my other cousin. Lives with my other cousin, Kevin. They're cool dudes. The last time I was in Nashville, they came and visited, hung out. You know? It was a good time. It's a good time. Good family time. I look forward to that family reunion every year. I look forward to it. I got a weird family, man. I have one of the, and every family's like this, where it's like, it takes people like, every conversation is about the next meal because it's going to take 5 hours to get everybody mobilized to actually go to a fucking restaurant. And then by the time you get to the restaurant, you have to already start saying goodbye to people because you're going to stand in the parking lot for another hour. It's just the slowest. You know, we always go and rent this, like, beautiful house up in the mountains, you know, where there's mountain fog and misty dew coming down off the mountains, beautiful view, and everyone just stays inside and watches, like, watches Wheel of Fortune. It's ridiculous.
What was I even talking about, though? Louie? The girl Louie? Yeah. Well, anyway, to all my family members, Liz, I love you guys. Thanks for listening. You know, if you ever want to come out to L.A., come out here. I spend my time with a robot, for fuck's sake. So come out here. Come hang out. Anyway, I met a girl named... So this girl, Louie, she thought I was hitting on her, which is... All right. There's two types of hot girls. There's the... And they're both equally as annoying. There's the hot girls that know they're hot, so they just assume every guy is hitting on them all the time. And then there's the hot girls that don't know they're hot, so they never think guys are hitting on them. And they're both equally annoying. So this girl, she thought I was hitting on her, but I wasn't. It's like you ever meet a girl and she's like, oh my God, this guy the other day at work used the worst pickup line. He came over and he was like, excuse me, ma'am, can I borrow your pen really fast? Ugh, like I haven't heard that one before. Like, no, he probably just wanted to borrow your pen, you arrogant cunt. You know? But then there's those girls like that are super hot, but they have no idea. So they never know guys are hitting on them. You know, oh yeah, he's just a cool guy. We were just hanging out. Yeah, he's a photographer, so he says he wants to take some pictures of me for his portfolio. So, yeah, you know, I gave him my phone number and he rubbed his penis on me for a second, but I think that was just kind of to feel out the shoot. You know what I mean? Anyway, he was a cool guy. I think he's going to be a good buddy. And you're just like, no, just everyone wants to jizz on you all the time. So anyway, asking a girl about her name is tough, especially if she's a hot girl, because LA is full of hot girls. But they're a dime a dozen, so it doesn't even matter. Like, beautiful girls are equally as rare everywhere. There's a difference between beautiful and hot. If you're in shape and you're a girl, you can be hot. You can turn yourself into a hot girl if you're keep yourself thin or whatever. You know, because you put on makeup, you're painting your fucking face. That's what makeup is. You're painting your face. All right? So you can just, I don't know, paint on a better face. I don't know how it works. But that girl was weird. She had a lot of tattoos. I don't like girls with tons of tattoos. I've dated some girls that have tattoos, but it's like a tattoo is basically saying, like, you know, too many tattoos. It's like, I can't really figure out a way to be interesting on the inside. So here's my tattoos. What? Do they mean anything? What? No, don't. And they get mad at you for asking them that. What's this tattoo all about? I get asked that all the time. Fucking annoying. Oh. Okay, it's weird, because that's like a voluntary thing that you just did, so I thought maybe you would know you'd get asked about it all the time, probably. Anyway, I got to wrap this thing up here, but I want to tell you guys, I'm sorry Walter's not in the episode, but like I said, it's the middle of the night, and Walter had a very traumatizing day. It was the first earthquake for both of us, and Walter immediately, he shut himself down. He's got, like, sensors, and he shut himself down, and Walter is asleep. Actually, let me go over, and we'll... You can hear him snoring, which is funny. Hold on. Here you go. Oh, he's grunting. He's about to fart. I'm going to catch the fart in the mic. Here he goes.
Ugh.
It's weird. It smells like silicone. Anyway. But I get all these emails about Walter, where people say to me, Jesse, you should get Walter to say this or get Walter to do this. Or I think it'd be funny if Walter acted this way. Like, I don't have control over that. That it kind of bothers me that people just think that Walter is like a thing that I do, like a character on the show or something. Which is not Walter, is very real. Walter disagrees with me all the time. Walter corrects me. I say the wrong thing. I get corrected by Walter. Do you think that I would intentionally... All right, so I'm going to intentionally say the wrong thing, but secretly know the right thing, to have the robot character correct me on the right thing, to make myself look stupid. You know how many levels that is? I'm not that deep. I'm not a... Only like a comic genius would do that sort of thing. You think I'm a comic genius? Is that what you're putting out there? Because I'm not. All right? I don't... No, maybe a comic genius would have a fake robot, you know, that they use, you know, to break up the show. But I you know, I'm not that. No, I can't get that into it. I'm not that computer savvy. You know, I'm not like a sound engineer or anything, so I can't get into that. But yeah, there's no brilliance here. I'm not brilliant. I did a show. The last poster that was made for a show I did, it billed me as a brilliant young comedian, which made me very uneasy. It's a lot of pressure to put on somebody. Because I'm not brilliant, all right? I'm not you know who was brilliant? Like Beethoven. That guy was a deaf composer. He was a deaf fucking composer. Do you understand? And people, do you understand how crazy that is to be a deaf composer? The one thing you need to do what you're doing, he doesn't have. It's like, oh, he runs marathons, doesn't have legs. But Beethoven was brilliant. And I've been finding out a lot about Beethoven. There's this BBC documentary. It's like they play it on NPR because it's in cooperation with NPR. And I've got it downloaded. I should put it on here. I'll play it for you guys. Just we'll end with a little Beethoven thing. You guys can learn about Beethoven because I find his life fascinating. And they've just there've been these new discoveries about him. Yeah, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna play this. I'm gonna play this BBC thing. Anyway, I just want to let everyone know this podcast is very real. There's no characters. There's no sketches. All right, it's just me and Walter doing what we do. And I hope you guys enjoy it. But I don't want you to think there's no gimmicks here. This is not a gimmick show. Okay. But anyway, I'm gonna play this BBC clip for you guys. I hope you enjoy it. You know, it's like 15 minutes, but it's this whole expose on Beethoven, and it's really, really fascinating. So I'm going to play that, and yeah, but I'm not a gimmicky guy, so I'm just going to play this thing for you, very real, keep it real, and then we're going to close out the show. Here we go.
This is a BBC production for BBC Three in cooperation with BBC World on the BBC.
Ludwig. Von Beethoven. Few are alive today that would not instantly recognize the melodies of this man's more well-known works. Musicologists stare in awe at the score sheets of his concertos. In music conservatories around the globe, his works are studied, pondered, and his signature Austrian style of composition is fruitlessly duplicated in hopes of one day pinpointing the root of his genius. His music is held in higher regard by virtually all classical historians than the music of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Johann Sebastian Bach, and the Bee Gees. A recent discovery in a small hamlet outside of Vienna, Austria, has led to a renewed respect for Beethoven's brilliance. Before we dive into recent events, we'll hear from Cambridge University's chief European historian, Sir Nigel Wadswallow.
Beethoven was born the 16th of December in 1770. It was an extremely cold winter, especially in the city of Bonn, his birthplace, and a childhood illness from this particular cold streak may have resulted in his eventually going deaf. Bonn, which is in modern-day Germany, was at that time a part of the Electorate of Cologne, a subsect of the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation. This was an exciting time to be European, aside from the syphilis, of course. You see, the Enlightenment theory was in full swing. The Renaissance had just ended, and the French Revolution had not yet torn apart the country. When Beethoven, in his early 20s, moved to the progressive, music-centric city of Vienna, in modern-day Austria, and home of Mozart, it must have been the same feeling that a teenage Amish boy gets today upon making their first trip to a pornography shop. Aside from the syphilis, of course.
Vienna, Austria. The epicenter of classical music. Beethoven traveled to Austria alone. Soon after his arrival, the nation was stunned at the death of Mozart, leaving Joseph Haydn the most famous musician in the world. Beethoven would study under Haydn. To dive deeper into this subject, we speak to the premier musicologist of the University of Berlin, Victor von Siemengurgel.
Beethoven was a brilliant young man. When he arrived in Austria, he was already one of the leading European improvisers at the piano. Yeah. Joseph Haydn would try to constrain this genius, of course. But he taught Beethoven all of the music theory of the high classical period. Yeah. He concentrated Beethoven's studies on counterpoint theory, which is the call and answer of instruments while providing musical symmetry, a very difficult theory indeed. Yeah. The canon form, in which a piece begins with a single instrument and then is joined seemingly in conversation by another, and so on and so forth, until a final crescendo. the sonata form, in which a single melody provides the landscape for another, higher melody, like the smoke burning on a stick of incense, or a beautiful butterfly wavering in the wind. The classical sonata will end as it begins, with a single melody, symmetry.
Yeah!
And the fugue form, which is for fagots.
Beethoven's first concertos came out to rave reviews. His pieces were sorted by opus number, as heard in this piece, opus number 27, piano sonata number 14, also known as the Moonlight. Evoked such emotion that oftentimes the princes in the musical courts would dismiss themselves, and the rest of the chamber would surround Beethoven's piano, tears in their eyes. His opus number 55, also known as the Triumphant Third Symphony, was reviewed by leading Viennese music journalist of the time, Helga Frogistitz.
He began simply, as if to suggest we had just wasted our money. After all, 3 florins is no small expense. But suddenly, as if angels had entered the room from the heavens, such sublime tones filled our ears as to make the audience weep for joy. His excellent knowledge of the woodwind section was particularly displayed during the third movement, and the enchanting allegro closed with a bombardment of string arpeggios, each placed with the precision of a clockmaker. He followed this with an encore performance of his famous Moonlight Sonata in the Pathetique movement, which was storming the country for its romantic appeal. Luckily, he spared us of any fugue form, which is for faggots.
And then there was silence.
Beethoven went fully deaf quite quickly, for he'd been hiding from his friends for some time that there were clicks and pops in his ears. In the morning, loud ringing would occur, which modern science has concluded is actually the death of a frequency in your inner ear. The news eventually got out to the public. He continued his compositions and began taking long walks, sometimes for days alone in the countryside around Vienna. He could be seen by locals storming through the woods, hooting and hollering in some sort of unknown gibberish, occasionally dropping everything to furiously scribble a musical idea in his notebook. What I wouldn't give for that notebook. Despite this seeming mania, however, when we listen to his works, after his disease grabbed hold, it's some of the best available in all of the human catalogue. His triumphant Fifth Symphony, the beautiful Ode to Joy in the Ninth, even his later fugues, which are normally for faggots. Why those reviews are so terrible at the time, we'll never know. Perhaps it was the syphilis.
At the time of Beethoven going deaf, he had yet to write his most well-known and beloved works. The caliber of his genius has been untouched for 2 centuries, yet he died poor and alone. The music journalist reviews of the time hated his later works, which all scholars today can agree are the best classical pieces ever written. But why? Why were they so scorned then and so appreciated now? Is it possible he was that ahead of his time? Or was there another, more mysterious piece of this puzzle?
Ludwig, in his later deaf years, composed several symphonies and string quartets, and it's baffled us all for years why his concerto reviews were so awful. Yeah. When we listen to his music now, it's utterly perfect, with a perfect structure and an instrumental balance the likes of which we'll never see for another millennia. Yeah. But those reviews speak volumes.
Last night, several other reviewers and I went to see Beethoven unveil his 9th Symphony. Despite my prior thoughts of Beethoven's brilliance, I would advise my readers to avoid this symphony at all costs. I would be doing Beethoven a great service by saying that it's complete shit. It's beyond shit. It's like if you took a shit, ate the shit, shit it out into a woman's mouth who has leprosy, and she shit it into a bowl while having her period in the bowl, and her leathery vagina lips fall off into the bloody shit, and you eat that shit again, repeat the process, until the shit is so processed by human bile that it melts through metal. You put it into a turkey baster and insert that into your ears. That's like hearing 3 seconds of this awful fucking symphony. Beethoven should kill himself by choking on Satan's ballsack.
Beethoven, embarrassed and belittled, fled Vienna, to settle in a small summer cottage in the hills just outside the city's gates. It was in this small summer home that the most remarkable musical discovery of all time took place, just earlier this month.
When we hear recordings of his music, it's not his actual music we're hearing, you see. Obviously, no recording equipment was around at the time to record his actual concert. What we're hearing is a modern orchestra playing from the musical scores he left behind for us. That is, his work on paper. A symphony has more paper in it than a novel, you see. The violins have their pages of music, the cello its own pages of different music, the horns their music, and so on, and it all fits together to make beautiful music. But the discovery, well, it never occurred to us. We had always assumed that what we were hearing was the complete picture, like the syphilis outbreak. But what we were hearing was the precursor, just the symptoms of the syphilis. To put it in metaphor, of course.
173 pages of undiscovered Beethoven music. Musical scores from his later symphonies that until now, and on all Beethoven recordings in stores, are omitted. What we were hearing was not what the people at his live concertos were hearing at all. They were hearing many more instruments, playing many more parts, even including sound effects, the first known use of sound effect in music. The discovery was made last month by a couple on their second honeymoon, an Irish Catholic couple from Norwood, Massachusetts, in the United States of America, the McCumslurps.
Angie and I always wanted to go to Europe, you know, but we had the kids and I was building engines all day. Who's got the time? When Freddie Jr. went off to college, we saved a little. We thought, now's the time. Angie wanted to go to Austria because she loves Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's where he's from. Did you ever see Twins? You gotta see Twins. It's the best movie ever. We used to keep the VHS and the VCR all day, play it at parties, you know. The kids love Kindergarten Cop. It's not a doomer, you know. It's a good, clean fun. Anyway, we rented a little summer cottage for a week right in the river there, outside Vienna, and I'm in the bathroom cleaning up for the first night of the honeymoon, you know, a little hanky-panky in the side. I'm putting some towels in the cupboard. Notice all these sheets of paper stuck under one of the shelves. I don't know what all these sheets of papers was, so I called my travel agent. She said that Beethoven used to live here and I should mail the paper off to a museum, so I did. Except for a few sheets, because at the top they said they were fugues, which is for faggots. Yeah, we got a call from the museum. They told Angie we found all these missing parts of Beethoven's symphonies, like the Rosetta Stone or something. And they paid for the whole trip. If I'd known that, they would have paid for the trip there, I would have gotten first class tickets. You know, because they play movies up in first class. Maybe we could have watched Twins.
When the newly discovered scores of music arrived in London, orchestra conductors furiously scrambled to re-record the later works. In Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, for instance, the London Philharmonic Orchestra needed to recruit a new 50 members to fully reproduce the original tones of the score. Here, heard for the first time, as it's meant to be heard, and as it was actually written, is the glorious Ode to Joy from the fourth movement of Beethoven's Ninth. Imagine yourself, perhaps, in an Austrian theater in 1821, being exposed to music the likes of which were generations ahead of its time. This is the London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Ian Lodgobler.
If there was any doubt before, there is not doubt now. Beethoven was the master of music.
This is absolutely brilliant. The flatulent crescendos into a final gaseous scherzo before the final allegro. This is brilliant. Yeah!
All can agree When we hear the reorchestrated Beethoven works, we are hearing pure genius. This is the final piece of the puzzle. This was simply too ahead of its time for the Viennese public. Genius is often misunderstood. Ludwig von Beethoven was immortal, but his works will live on forever, lingering in the air like a beautiful odor. On the last page of the discovered scores was a personal letter from the maestro himself, heard here for the first, and out of respect for the deceased, the last time.
This is a message to whoever finds this letter. Look, here's the deal. I'm totally fucking deaf. People expect me to be this great composer. I used to be great, but I'm deaf. Does that resonate with you people? Deaf. What, do you think I'm magic? There's no such thing as magic. I can't fucking hear, you morons. It's music, I'm deaf. No more music. Anyway, when I die, I'm hiding all the music I've written since I lost my hearing. I had all this other shit written beforehand, but didn't tell anybody. But what do you want from me? A fucking miracle? There's no such thing as miracles. Jesus, man, it's annoying. Every morning I wake up whenever I want, because the alarm is useless. Why? Because I'm deaf. Nobody wants to fuck me. Dude, seriously, this is fucked. I'm getting bad reviews? Really? Oh, a deaf guy makes shitty music? Who would've thought? Did you see that blind painter on the corner? Yeah, he just paints giant dicks all day. People are so fucking shitty. Anyway, I'm calling this piece Ode to Joy, because the only joy I get anymore is farting on the face of humanity, you fucking losers. Fuck you, Ludwig von Beethoven.
The final, obviously joking words of Ludwig von Beethoven. I've been your host, Willoughby, cum glazed uvula. Thank you.
This is a BBC production for BBC Three in cooperation with BBC World on the BBC.
See, I find that completely fascinating. I mean, it's a fascinating story, you guys. It's a big discovery, you know? And, yeah, I think they did that, I think that was a very well-made documentary. I think they really made it. I think they really nailed it there. Anyway, that's going to be it for the podcast this week. I'm going to try to keep it about the same length as this last one, about 38 minutes or so. So, next podcast, it will be Walter and I. I'm working on getting some interviews lined up. Some people I really want to get in. And Walter and I, we're going to Bridgetown, the comedy festival together. So we're going to interview, you know, I'm going to set up shop in the hotel room. I kind of set up a little studio there, and we're going to get all those people in. Anyway, thanks for listening. I hope you had a good Easter. Hope you're having a good Passover, or some other weird Scientology shit. All right. Take care, everybody. Thanks again. Bye.